Section 3, Civil Rights. As you read, look for how the armed forces led the way in ending segregation in the United States, the accomplishments of Louisiana civil rights attorney Alexander Pierre Toro, partial victory for African Americans in the Baton Rouge bus boycott, why progress in school integration was slow in southern states, important federal legislation passed during Lyndon B. Johnson's terms as president. Terms: boycott, Brown v. Board of Education, Civil Rights Act of 1964, Voting Rights Act of 1965. People tend to think that the civil rights movement in the United States began because of the social changes brought on by World War II, but it is more accurate to say that a longer-term movement received a new spark of energy and commitment in the years after 1945. African Americans have been trying to achieve an equal place in American life from the end of the Civil War forward. However, after the Plessy Separate but Equal decision in 1896, there was an era of segregation and inequality in the nation, and especially in the states of the former Confederacy. Civil rights in the military. These kinds of inequalities were especially noticeable when people of different races had to work closely and cooperatively to achieve a military victory. Not surprisingly, then, the nation's armed services were among the first places where segregation came to an end. On July 26, 1948, President Harry S. Truman signed Executive Order 9948, which was intended to end racial segregation in the military. The order began by noting, "It is hereby declared to be the policy of the President that there shall be equality of treatment and opportunity for all persons in the armed services without regard to race, color, religion, or national origin." Civil rights in Louisiana. Although change took place slowly in the military, long-term legal quests for social equality gained momentum after President Truman's order. In Louisiana, local chapters of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP, have been challenging segregation laws in the courts. Until the late 1930s, however, even the NAACP had relied on white lawyers, believing that they would be more effective advocates in the South's Jim Crow judicial systems. The influence of A.P. Toro. Not all NAACP members agreed with this policy. One of them was a Louisiana-born man named Alexander Pierre Toro. Toro was born in 1899 but left Louisiana as a young man to seek opportunity elsewhere. After a decade living in other places, Toro returned to his hometown of New Orleans after earning a law degree from Howard University. As an African-American lawyer, Toro used only his first initials, A.P., even with his closest associates. This would keep people from referring to him by his first name, as whites commonly did when speaking to people of color in this era in the Jim Crow South. Over time, A.B. Toro became the most prominent civil rights attorney in the state. From the 1940s until his death in 1972, Toro served as the chief lawyer for most of the civil rights cases filed in Louisiana. Although he lost many cases, his perseverance and commitment ultimately led to many legal victories. His representation resulted in a court order that required the state to pay its African-American teachers at the same level as its white teachers. Toro also fought long and hard to achieve integration of the state's public colleges and universities. He also filed suits that helped to end segregation on means of public transportation, like buses and streetcars. The Baton Rouge bus boycott. Although lawyers like Toro were critically important to the civil rights struggle, they did not act alone. Individuals also joined together and made brave decisions, whether it was to serve as a plaintiff, the person filing a lawsuit, in a civil rights case, or to act with other community members to end discrimination. In 1953, for example, African Americans in Baton Rouge staged a boycott of the city-run buses to protest their unequal treatment. A boycott is a protest in which people refuse to buy certain goods or use certain services until specific conditions are met. African American passengers were required to sit or stand in the back of the bus, even when no white passengers were on board. They also felt drivers treated them rudely. In response, they decided to protest their treatment by boycotting the buses altogether. Because most of them did not have cars, members of the community established a free ride system to help boycotters get to and from work and to places they could not reach by walking. Within 3 weeks, the city was forced to negotiate. The boycotters and the city reached a compromise that resulted in better treatment and more access to seats on buses rather than having to stand even though seats were available. Their victory, though limited, provided a model upon which other civil rights protesters around the country could build. The slow process of integrating schools. Civil rights supporters also achieved a major victory in 1954. In that year, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in Brown v. Board of Education, a case specifically focused on the desegregation of public schools, but that also overturned the separate but equal provisions of the 1896 Plessy v. Ferguson case. The Brown decision ordered that states and local school districts should begin to integrate their schools with all deliberate speed. However, since there was no specific timetable, opponents of school integration slowed the process as much as they could. Not until 1960 did public schools in New Orleans begin to integrate. When they did, those who opposed racial mixing protested vehemently, strongly. White parents removed their children from the two schools that were integrated in the city's Ninth Ward. Even parents who wished to leave their children in the newly integrated schools found themselves the targets of threats and intimidation. Parents who opposed integration were offered assistance in removing their children from schools in Orleans Parish. Under the direction of Leander Perez, St. Bernard Parish sent buses to the Orleans Parish line to transport students to the whites-only schools in St. Bernard, set up specifically to accommodate them. This strategy of fighting back against the new federal requirement to desegregate public facilities was given the name Massive Resistance. Those who believed strongly that integration was wrong organized into groups called White Citizens Councils. Although their hostility to integration was strong and widespread, eventually the weight of federal legislation pushed southern states to accept federal court decisions. President Johnson and Civil Rights. President Lyndon B. Johnson, a former U.S. Senator and Vice President from Texas, had become president after the assassination of John F. Kennedy on November 22, 1963. Johnson had spent much of his career as a supporter of segregation, so it surprised many that he signed two of the most important pieces of federal civil rights legislation adopted in the 20th century. The first, known as the Civil Rights Act of 1964, required that people be given equal access to public facilities throughout the nation, regardless of their race. The law also outlawed discrimination in employment, forcing most public agencies to integrate their workforces after 1964. The following year, President Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act of 1965. This legislation required southern states to allow African Americans to return to the voting rolls. It also outlawed poll taxes as one of the devices that kept poor and minority voters off the rolls. If state governments refused to comply, the federal government could appoint its own registrars to assure equal access to the ballot without consideration of race. These two pieces of legislation led to profound shifts in society and in politics, especially in southern states like Louisiana. Changes come to Louisiana. In 1960, Jimmy Davis had been elected to a second term as governor, largely on the strength of his promise to support and defend segregation. By 1964, the federal government passed legislation outlawing segregation. In the aftermath, Louisiana began to make widespread changes. The state integrated schools and public facilities and returned blacks to the voting rolls. Between 1964 and 1972, Governor McKithen worked to reduce the bad feelings and violence that took place during the long struggle to create a more racially integrated state. The return of large numbers of African Americans to the voting rolls after 1965 reshaped Louisiana's electorate and its politics in the decades that followed. By the early 1970s, a candidate named Edwin Edwards enthusiastically pursued the votes of African Americans. His success in doing so, and in becoming governor, had a profound influence on the more recent history of the state. It is to those decades that we now turn. Special feature: Ruby Bridges, a hero of integration. Take a look around your classroom. Chances are your classmates come from different ethnic backgrounds, races, and religions. Before the 1960s, however, children of different races were not allowed to attend school together in Louisiana. Ruby Bridges was one of the first black children to attend an integrated school in the state. As a six-year-old first grader, Ruby became a symbol for the civil rights movement and a role model for other students in the South. Ruby Bridges was born in 1954, the same year of the landmark Supreme Court decision in Brown v. Board of Education. The court called for integration of all schools. In the spring of 1960, it was announced that schools in New Orleans would be integrated in the fall. In order for African American children to be allowed to attend an integrated school, they were required to take an intelligence test, and their families had to submit to an extensive background check. These were two things white children were not required to do. Ruby was one of six black children chosen to attend an integrated school in the fall of 1960, and the only one attending William Franz Public School in the Ninth Ward. As a result of delays from the school system, Ruby did not begin her first grade school year until Monday, November 14, 1960. On that first day, Ruby and her mother were driven to school by federal law enforcement officials called marshals. As Ruby and her mother exited the car, they were met by angry people protesting integration. These protests would eventually turn into riots throughout New Orleans. Norman Rockwell's 1963 painting, The Problem We All Live With, famously depicts Ruby's walk to school, escorted by federal marshals. Initially, some white children remained at Ruby's school, but they were not in her class. By January of 1961, Ruby was the only student at her school. Nevertheless, she attended school every day and learned from her teacher, Mrs. Barbara Henry. The following school year was much different for Ruby as more children, both white and African American, attended her school. Ruby became a symbol of the civil rights movement. Every day she kept her head up and calmly went to school, regardless of protesters and their angry words. What do you think was the biggest challenge Ruby faced?